You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Want to talk about a new movie? Check. Want to talk about an older movie similar or related to that new movie?
Check.
That's what you can expect from Quality Check Podcast.
It's a new podcast on the Studio DNA Network hosted by yours truly, Drew Douglas and
Daniel Posey. Every other Tuesday, we'll talk about a new movie and an old movie to see how the film's quality holds up.
Pulse FM and the Studio DNA Podcast Network present What Else with Corey Mann. Hit subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts or visit the archives on Apple, Spotify, or Google Play. The Studio DNA Podcast Network.
My guest this week is Tasha Layton.
Though the mountains may be moved into the sea, though the ground beneath might crumble and give way, I can hear my father singing over me. It's gonna be okay. It's gonna
Pauline, South Carolina.
Tell me
about that town.
The town where I grew up, we had one flashing light and a volunteer fire department. Technically, the flashing light was the town over's, but we claimed it. But we did have a very small community, a lot of farming, a dairy farm. But it was wonderful to grow up. You know, I grew up playing outside with no shoes and with my imagination. We didn't have, you know, social media and tablets, and we didn't have all that stuff. So I'm very appreciative of how I grew up.
Don't you miss that?
I do miss it. Yeah.
Crack of dawn, out the door, kind of know when dinner time was, and then go back out until twilight, and front doors were unlocked.
Yeah. I would just crack the door, and if I smelled food, I'd go in.
Did you get yelled at from across the neighborhood or across the farm?
Well, we didn't have a neighborhood.
Did you have a bell or anything?
We didn't have a neighborhood. It was basically just my mom, and she's loud enough to where we heard her. There was no qualms about hearing mom.
Tell me about mom and dad.
My parents are hard workers. They're amazing people, and dad is very sensitive. My mom is a force to be reckoned with. You experience my mom. You don't meet my mom. They ride motorcycles. I grew up riding motorcycles and shooting guns. And
are you a tomboy?
Yeah, I was, I think. And then God had a sense of humor because then he sent me to a women's college. Yeah, I didn't wear a lot of makeup. I had short hair and holy jeans and Birkenstocks and drove a Jeep and just a country girl.
When did you start singing?
My mom says I sang out of the womb, but I've always sang. I think there was a period in my life when I didn't sing as much. I grew up, you know, in church, but then we changed churches, and I kind of had my first experience with the presence of God, and I remember walking in and just feeling something alive, like about the service and about the people there, and I just got really passionate for God and was leading worship in the youth group, and then just kind of experienced a lot of hurt in church. That was really painful, and I think I entered a pretty dark season of depression and tried to commit suicide, and it was just a really hard season. And then kind of at my lowest of low, I just realized, you know what? I've searched out all these other religions and I've done all these other things, but Jesus is the only person who's ever given any power to transform. And so I thought, I'm just going to choose to go back to church, because faith is a decision, like love is a decision. And so I thought, I'm just going to go back, and sooner or later, maybe something will stick. And so a year later, the pastor said, you know, if you want a touch from God, come up at the end of the service. And I left 3 hours later. I was just a sobbing mess on the ground and just went through a lot of healing. And that church family just loved me. They just loved me. And there's a lot of power in love. Like, no judgment, just love. I think we underestimate the power of God's love and how, like, mercy triumphs over judgment. Mercy triumphs over judgment. And his loving kindness is so amazing. So anyway, that led me on a track to go to seminary and move to California. And I lived there for 10 years. It was awesome. Ate a lot of great Latin food and a lot of good avocados. And I miss California a lot.
How old were you when you thought, I'm done with life?
I was 18 or 19.
How'd you get yourself out of that hole?
I didn't get myself out of the hole. God did. You know, in Psalms, that's why I identify so much with that scripture, Lord, you pick me up out of a pit and you set my feet on a rock. I identify with that a lot. And I think in the end, it really was just, I searched out anywhere I could find truth. I was like, just like, I need truth in my life. I need to heal. I went to Buddhist meditation camp. I went to mosque. I went to synagogue. I studied mysticism in Europe for a summer. I did everything I could do.
Wow, you were really on a journey.
I did everything I could do to try to find truth. And at the end, like in all these other religions, you're striving for God. You're striving to be good enough or attain enlightenment or anything like that. But in Christianity, Jesus is pursuing you. And so I think in the end, it was just that nothing else had helped me. Nothing else I had tried had ever helped me except Christianity. I just couldn't reconcile the fact that most of the people I knew who were Christians had been really mean. So I couldn't reconcile that in my mind. But then I thought, you know what? We're not perfect. We're all in this together. And I don't have any control over what happens to me, but I have control over how I respond to it. And so I just decided that I wasn't going to let that affect my life anymore. And it was a lot of counseling, a lot of people loving me, and then just Jesus. I think in the end, it really was just Jesus. Like, he rescued me, he saved me. And then after that, I didn't look back. I thought, this is it for me. I've gone to the lowest of low that I could even imagine. And you were there. And now I'm not in that place. And I have no other explanation than the power of God. And so that's what I've relied on ever since.
That search for truth, is that something from mom and dad that you inherited, or just something inside you was like, I'm going to go chase this thing until I figure it out? Did that come from somewhere?
I think my mom is really open-minded. She's a very creative person. And so I think I probably inherited some of that open-mindedness from her. But neither one of my parents, I never saw that modeled. I never saw them searching or anything like that. They're both really smart people. They're really intelligent. My dad's an engineer. My mom was a photographer, but just real street smart, you know, like does all kinds of things and is just good at it. And I think in a sense, I had this drive to be perfect or good enough, because I saw they're both kind of perfectionists and they had high standards. And so they love me to death. They're my biggest fans. But, you know, every parent kind of screws up their kid a little bit. Like, you know, we're all going to have wounds from our parents, no matter how hard we try not to. Even now, as we're parenting our son Levi, he's one. And I'm just like, man, how am I going to mess up being a parent? But you can't think that way. But yeah, I think, you know, I probably inherited some open-mindedness from her, but I never saw anybody else search like that.
10 years out on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about those 10 years. Tell me about seminary. What do you remember most about that?
You know, seminary is a lot about what you're learning, but it's more about who you're becoming. And I think it's a character shaping time. You know, I remember things that I learned in class, and I certainly read a lot of books and wrote a lot of papers, but it was more about how much of a servant is God making me during this time. I think I went to the King Seminary in California. It's Jack Hayford's school that he started, and every class began with servant as. Servant as worship leader, servant as pastor, servant as, because every class had that underpinning of servanthood. And so I think it was more about kind of who I was becoming, for sure. And then after seminary, I was a worship leader at a church for 4 years, and then ended up doing American Idol. Did not plan on doing that. It was never anything that I thought was a good idea. And then,
how did that happen? Tryouts are a big deal back then.
Some people I knew were trying out and kind of convinced me to go. And I just thought, you know what? I'm just going to go hang out and have fun. It's fine. But I show up at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, and there are 17,000 people. They're only choosing 200. I was like, none of y'all are going to make it. This is crazy, including me. Like, we're not going to make it. All these professional singers in LA are here to audition. And I ended up making it. And then I made it all the way through Hollywood Week. And every day I was like, whoa, this is progressing. And I never expected it to. But when I was cut, I just realized like how natural I felt in that environment. And I knew that God was maybe calling me to do something outside of the church. Up until that point, I'd only worked in the church and kind of in full-time ministry. And so when I sensed that, I went to my pastor and told him, and he said, you know, Tasha, I've known that for a long time. I'm glad that you finally are seeing that, you know, that you're called to be salt out of the shaker, because you can't season anything if you're in the shaker, right? And so I just waited for the opportunity. I waited for God to open a door. I didn't pursue it or anything like that. And then I was helping lead worship at this conference down in Orange County, and the keys player played for Kesha, and they were looking for a background vocalist for the Kesha Rihanna tour and called me. And then I auditioned, I got the job. But then that morning that I was supposed to start rehearsal at 2 p.m., I called them and I said, I'm so sorry, I just don't feel like this is right for me. Because I woke up and I just had that gut feeling that I wasn't supposed to do it. And I didn't understand. I called my pastor. He said, oh, you're just self-sabotaging because you're scared, you know. And I thought, that makes a lot of sense. But I've also gone against this voice enough in life to know not to do it again. And okay. So I called them, I said no. But then at the same time I was supposed to be meeting with them for rehearsal, I got a call from Katy Perry's manager, can you be here in 20 minutes? And I was like, whoa, like how in the world?
How did that happen? Did someone hear?
Her manager remembered me from American Idol because Katy was my guest judge at the auditions.
Wow.
And I interacted with him for maybe 30 seconds actually at a friend's house months later and didn't know. And when they were looking for somebody, they looked me up and they called me. And I just thought, you know, it's just so clear sometimes when you trust God and you give it to him and you don't try to push your way or strive, he just opens the doors he wants to open when they're supposed to be open. And I, you know, never tried to do that. I just never pursued it. But yet he opened two kind of giant doors in 1 week. And so people that I had known who had been in the music industry for a while, you know, they would have killed for a job like that. And here I was, like, at a little church in Northridge with no sights on that at all. And then it just happens. But it was so clear that it was the right thing when it happened, too. And I downloaded the song on my phone on the way and then walked in, and we left for Madison Square Garden 2 days later. And then I was on the road with her for years after that. And
let's do some super nerdy music questions.
Yeah.
The song was
California Girls. They didn't tell me anything. They said it's going to be with the song California Girls. So I downloaded the song on my phone. I learned it on the way. And then when I got there, about 20 minutes later, they said, okay, you're next. And so they literally just, okay. It was just the band and Katy. And
oh,
then
she was there.
She was there in the back of the room. And it was just the band on stage. And they literally said, you're next. They threw me the mic. And I stepped up and I literally just sang the song. I sang some of the leads and I sang some of the harmonies and just kind of interacted with the band. Honestly, I just did what I do on Sundays, like with the band and on stage. I didn't do anything differently. Like, I just kind of interacted with people just like I do on Sunday in church. And then when it was time to choose somebody, the manager said that, you know, I like such and such girl, and then I like this girl. Like, and then I had a conversation with her after. It was great. She just kind of asked me about my life and I think she thought it was interesting that I worked at a church, and she asked me about my faith a little bit. And then literally I just got a call later that night. Later that night? Yeah, like be at rehearsal tomorrow.
And does she, or do they go, look, you got a problem with dressing like a cupcake? You know, are you okay with confetti? Are you okay with bright colors? I mean, did they pre-warn you?
I have to say, so one of my first shows with her, we did do Madison Square Garden for a CW promo show. And then the outfit that they gave, Snoop Dogg was there, you know, doing the rap for the song and all that. And we were in wardrobe. And a lot of times we didn't get the wardrobe till 10 minutes before the show or an hour before the show. Like sometimes it'd be really at the last minute. When they brought me my wardrobe, I have to say, I just had this like fear come over me because I had never worn anything like that. It was really high heels. And they brought me this dress. I think it was like an American Apparel dress or something, but like you could see through it. And I was like, you can see through this dress. And so they're like, oh, okay. So they went and bought a couple more. And so we just layered them so you couldn't see through it.
Wow.
And it was just kind of crazy. But Katie was very gracious. Like if we ever felt uncomfortable in anything, we could tell her and she would tell them to make adjustments. So that was great. Like she was very respectful in that way. And so I never had to wear much that I felt really uncomfortable with. And if I ever did, I just told her. So that was good.
I don't think you're going to answer this.
Okay.
But I'm a super nerdy music question. How do you get paid? Is it like a weekly paycheck, a biweekly paycheck?
Yeah, I think it depends. Like a lot of times in the music industry, it's it just depends on the situation. So like promotional tour, like let's say they don't know if they're going to keep you or you're kind of auditioning for a time or they're trying you out, you know, as a new musician. Sometimes you'll just get a check per show and, you know, you'll get travel pay and stuff like a daily per diem also, and they'll pay for all your travel. But then once you get to a certain point when you're on a tour and stuff, you sign a contract and you're in it for the long haul. So we were salaried after that.
Did they like that night they called you and said, hey, do you want the job? Do they go, and this is what it pays?
Yeah.
Like, if I'm looking for a new job, that my wife's first question is like, what are we looking at here?
Yeah. No,
they told me. To go, okay, you know, is that going to be feasible for me to?
They told me. And then you have, you know, some room to negotiate when tours come
up. Is it
an
impressive number? Is it like, you know?
Oh, I will say that it was more than I had ever been paid before.
Wow.
For
okay.
sure. I think, but I'd also been in ministry my whole life. So,
yeah, there's that.
You know, it's relative. It's relative.
Was that a hard conversation to tell the church you're going to go do this because you were working at
the church? No, they knew that it was coming. I think they blessed me on the way, you know, like they were excited and very encouraging. And I'd spent a lot of time kind of pouring into the people who were there. So they were ready to kind of take over, too. So it was great. And then when you step out of a role like that, it just creates an opportunity for someone else to step up and do what God's called them to do. So when it's right for you, it's right for everybody. God's got a plan.
Did the town of Pauline call for tickets and we want to meet her?
I will say.
Out of the woodwork, you know, high school people that never.
Oh, yes. I definitely had a lot of requests like that. And then I will say that, you know, when I first took the job, I had spoken to a lot of youth groups that year leading up to it. And because of Idol and all that. And I got a lot of kind of concerned messages from youth pastors, like, how can you sing Katy Perry songs and be a Christian? Like, how can you reconcile this in your mind and heart? And, you know, I had nothing else to tell them other than Jesus ate with tax collectors and sinners. He made himself of no reputation. And, you know, I just told them I have a grace to do this. I just feel grace to do this. I can't explain it, but I know God is leading me to. You know, in the end, after conversations with them, they ended up being my biggest fans, and they also asked for tickets.
Interesting.
But it took a little time. I think people can be a little judgmental. We can all be a little judgmental.
They would throw a stone, but there was a note wrapped around the stone for a ticket request.
Hey, can I get a ticket?
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can I get a backstage pass?
So you quit. You feel like that season's over after 4 years?
I was staying with the Maasai tribe in Kenya, and we had a missions trip that summer in Kenya. And, you know, I left Kenya and met up with the tour in Malaysia, and they were going to go shopping. And I just couldn't reconcile it in my mind anymore. I missed leading worship. I missed, you know, singing songs that were directly pointing people to God. And I just knew that the season was over. And when I left, I also felt like, oh man, what am I going to do now? I knew it was over, but I also didn't have anything lined up. So okay. It was just that season of trust. Like, God, you've always been faithful to me. You've never changed. You're always the same. Like, you've always kept me. You've always provided for me and opened the door. So open the door now to whatever you have next. Like, I'm willing. I've never had one thing where I'm like, oh my gosh, if I don't get to do this, I'm going to be really unhappy for the rest of my life. It's always been, Lord, whatever I have, use it. And it's been different, you know, seasons of all kinds of things. Like, I taught theology and voice at a college in Nashville for the last 3 years. Like, before that, I was a session singer and I toured with Katie. Like, before that, I was helped with being a young adults pastor and a worship pastor. Like, whatever season I'm in, I just say, God, whatever it is, just use me. Just do whatever you want with my life. Because I know that I can trust him and that he knows what will fulfill me far greater than I know. He knows me way better than myself. So after I left Katie and after I, you know, kind of left the church I was at, I ended a relationship. My friends were moving away that I was close to in LA. Like, there were a lot of really defining moments and transitional moments. And so in that time, I just felt a little stuck. I wasn't sure what to do next, and I wasn't sure how to walk forward feeling the way I was feeling, because I couldn't put my finger on it, but I just felt sad and I didn't know why. And so I ended up going to counseling in Colorado. And through that period, I realized that there were lies that I had believed as a child that I was still living out as an adult. Just various lies like, I'm rejected, I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough, I have to be good at everything for anyone to like me. I'm not worth knowing. Like, all those lies I had believed and had never had a chance for it to move from my head to my heart. And so part of what my counselor took me through was, he calls it heart prayer, where basically you go back to your memories of when hard things happened to you. And because Jesus stands outside of time, because God created time and it's of no you know, consequence to him, he is still there when those things happen. So, like, he was there when it happened to you, but he's still there. And so he took me back kind of in my imagination and asked, you know, me to imagine that place where I was hurt and where was Jesus when that happened? And what did I believe about myself? But what is he saying about me instead? So replacing those lies with his truth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, anybody can tell you, well, you are valuable, you are worthy, you are loved, whatever. But unless you believe that, it doesn't help. And so I had been through counseling for many years, because it's part of your seminary experience even to kind of study counseling and everything. But I had never felt a true transformation until the words came from him directly, because there's power in his words and his words are living and powerful. And so that is what changed me. And I felt freedom from that. So the beginning verse of the song Love Lifted Me is, when I think of those times I'm hurting, I see you because you're there too. And that's that kind of inner healing prayer of, God, where were you when that stuff happened to me? And then in every pain, I feel you healing so that you'll see my heart running free. Because his goal, he wants us to be free. He wants us to be just know who we are in him and to live that out. And so the pre-chorus is, I'm saying no to my downcast soul. I'm saying no to the lies I tell myself, because we tell ourselves those lies and it's not the truth. And he says the truth will set you free. But it also says he's the way, the truth, and the life. And so it's really inviting him into those places to say, you know, you are the truth and you're going to show me how to be free and how to live this out.
So what gets you back to Nashville, Tennessee?
I think once I went through a lot of healing and just kind of replacing those lies with truth, then I had courage. I was like, man, I don't have to believe that I'm not good enough. I can do whatever I feel like God is calling me to do because I don't have to compare myself to anybody else. Like, you feel freedom in that because you start to see your own value, and then you don't have to think of anybody else less than to make yourself feel better. You start to see the value in other people too. You're like, wow, like one of the scriptures that I learned in counseling was that Ephesians passage where it says, "For we are his workmanship created in Christ Jesus, which he prepared good works ahead of time for us to walk into." And like that word workmanship is from the word poema, which basically means kind of masterpiece. Like you think of like an artist and their most proud work, their lifelong masterpiece. It's like the culmination of everything they've created. And mm-hmm. It says in Genesis, we are the crown of his creation. Like he sees us like his masterpiece. And when it says we are his poema, we are his masterpiece, like think of the most beautiful thing you can think of in nature. And we are far more beautiful than that. And when you start to see yourself like that, how he sees you, there is freedom and boldness in that. And I think that's where I thought, you know what? I can do this. I can create my own music and I can sing because he loves to hear me sing. He loves to hear you sing. He loves to hear everybody do what they're called to do. He loves that. And so I think I just found freedom and courage in that. And that's when I moved to Nashville because I thought, I can do this, guys. I can do this.
Do you remember what the first job was?
Well, technically, it was the first time I ever met my husband. He said he had some work for me when I moved to town, and I met him. And then that turned into a 5.5-hour first date where we talked about counseling, we talked about Jesus, we talked about everything. It was awesome. And
love at first sight?
I had this sense that he was my husband right away. It's funny. I always tell people, I think if he had not had something for me to work on, he would have invented something or made something up.
So you do some session work for Keith. Do you get involved in a church quickly? Do you start leading worship at a church? What happens next?
Yeah, finding a church in Nashville was hard for me. I went for probably over a year to all kinds of different churches and just couldn't find a community that I was, you know, I felt plugged into. You kind of get out of church what you put in a lot of times. Like you have to make an effort to build community. But even when I was making an effort, it wasn't providing a return. And so it took me a while, but then I landed at Church of the City. And from the first week I walked in, I knew that was our church. And it's just an amazing church. We do a lot for the city. We do a lot for missions. And we're on a rotation in our small groups where you have 1 week where you have a meal together, the second week you study the scriptures, and then the third week you serve the city. So you do something outside of yourself. And I love that because it gets you out of the church bubble. And because a lot of times we think that we're serving the world just by trying to be good people or whatever, but we're actually not doing anything. Mm-hmm. So we talk a lot, but we're not put into action. And so I love the fact that our church keeps us motivated and in action to serve the people around us. I love that.
Tasha Layton, and earlier this morning, you literally told me there's no question you won't answer. I even tried to throw you a couple of curveballs. You're like, here's the story. Good stuff.
Yeah, open book.
Beginning to the end, you're so close. You have never.
You've been listening to What Else with Corey Mann, part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. Production elements and voiceovers by audiblegenesis.com. Find complete podcast tools and production at audiblegenesis.com. Find this podcast and older episodes on Apple, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Hit the subscribe button so you never miss an episode. Leave a comment or review, tell a friend, and thank you for listening.
Everybody get out of here! There's a lobster loose! Oh, holy cow, he's loose!
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Get all the Masterforce outdoor power equipment you need to maintain your yard at Menards. Own the outdoors with Masterforce 80-volt power equipment, delivering all the power of gas without the maintenance. The entire 80-volt line is powered by brushless motors for ultimate performance and productivity. From lawnmowers to leaf blowers, string trimmers, and more. Find everything you need to create the lawn of your dreams with Masterforce power equipment at Menards. Save